My next guest is on the line. He's a remarkable man. He's Pastor Tumelo Tom. When hatred becomes an ideology, that's his latest post on social media. I find his posts refreshing, honest, and brave, and I always look forward to reading them. So once again, Pastor Tumelo Tom, thank you so much for being with us on the Home Run here on Chai FM.
Me.
Pastor, you with
Shalom.
Me? Shalom, Pastor. We got an awful line. I just want to see if you're with me and I can hear you a little better than I did initially. Are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
That's much better, Pastor. Yeah, don't move. Stay exactly where you are because that was crystal clear. Pastor, I want to jump right into the latest article which you have written, When Hatred Becomes an Ideology. Your post struck a nerve because you're not talking about politics. You're talking about what happens when hatred actually becomes a worldview. Tell me why did you write this article now?
You know, as always, for me, what moved me was just not politics, but, you know, the visible moral decay that we are witnessing in many societies. And so many people, you know, begin to justify violence because they dislike someone politically. We have crossed into that dangerous territory once that happened. So the reported attempted attack, for an example, on senior U.S. officials mm-hmm. is actually a reminder that hatred never stays, you know, theoretical. It eventually seeks expression. And so I wrote because we need to confront, you know, the spiritual and moral roots of violence before more lives are harmed.
Yeah, it seems like the brakes just don't work anymore. You write, and I think you're spot on, you write that hatred can be fed until it becomes a world view. I mean, it's a very powerful statement there, Pastor. I'm just wondering, how does somebody cross that line from anger into something so much darker that you actually are prepared to attempt to take the life of the American president?
You know, it usually begins, for an example, you know, with grievance. Someone feels hurt, someone feels angry or overlooked, or even fearful. So those emotions are actually real, but then they are fed by propaganda and echo, you know, chambers and voices that tells them your enemy is the cause of all your pain. And so over time, that complexity disappears and nuance then dies and every problem becomes the fault of one group or one leader. Mm. And then violence starts to feel righteous. And so that is actually dangerous.
You make a very strong distinction between democratic disagreement and violence. Why do you think that line is so incredibly blurred for so many people today?
Because many people are being taught that, you know, opponents are evil rather than merely wrong. So democracy actually requires maturity. And this is where I feel that many people are lacking, and democracies are lacking these days, maturity. That is the ability to disagree strongly, but without destroying another person or without destroying one another. But outrage culture rewards anger and not wisdom. So social media many a times amplifies, you know, extremes, and some leaders then begin to exploit division for power. And when words become reckless, then actions often, you know, follow. That's what we always see.
You use such a powerful piece, really such a powerful piece that you wrote. You wrote such a powerful phrase, minds colonized by extremism. And I'm just wondering, what does that mean to you? And what are the signs to you that somebody's no longer actually thinking for themselves?
Well, for me, it means a person's thinking has been captured. That's all it means for me. They are no longer reasoning, you know, independently. They are repeating slogans and reacting emotionally and seeing the world, you know, through a rigid lens of enemies and allies. So the signs mostly would then include the obsession or the inability to hear facts. And this is what I get to find myself confronted with on social media platforms, you know, facts and then celebration of cruelty when done by their side, and then loss of empathy. That's what we see. And once empathy dies, then extremism has entered deeply, and we need help. Our societies need help.
You mentioned that movements like Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Iranian regime, they're exporters of ideologies. And I'm just wondering, in your view, what is it about those particular organizations that people find so unbelievably seductive?
Well, because they market themselves, you know, through narratives of resistance. That's how they market themselves, you know, narratives of resistance or identity and strength. So to frustrated people, because many people are frustrated out there. So to frustrated people, that can sound, you know, attractive. But many violent movements, they sell romance and deliver ruin. That's what happens. They promise dignity through destruction, and they offer belonging, you know, through hatred, and then glorify power while leaving suffering, you know, in their wake. Look what has happened, in Gaza. Look what is happening in Lebanon today. And the West could actually happen, you know, in Iran, if nothing is going to be done quickly.
You point out a pattern that I think it's so important for us to understand. You talk about the hatred of Israel and the contempt for Christianity. They often go hand in hand. And I'm just wondering what in your mind connects those two targets?
You know, in many extremist mindset or mindsets, you know, both represent things they resent or they hate, like moral accountability, covenant identity, historic, you know, continuity.
Yes.
And their belief that truth exists beyond political ideology. But then Israel is often hated simply for existing and for refusing to disappear. That's the case. So Christianity is often attacked because it calls people to repentance, forgiveness, dignity, and responsibility before God. So that's the difference and the connection.
Pastor, I've been following you for a couple of months now, and it's so instructive to read the visceral hatred that is thrown at you following the publications of your pieces. But it even seems to me that in the last short while, it's almost as if the volume of the haters has been turned even louder. Do you think I'm right, or do you think I'm seeing something that's not there?
No, actually, you are right. You are right, and, you know, that volume of haters, it's out there. And for me, coming back to that question, probably both. You know, technology has given, you know, every extreme voice a microphone.
Yes.
And what once remained on the fringe can now spread globally, you know, in seconds. And you find it's like I posted something out there just in a span of a second, and, you know, it's like a flood of attacks and everything coming out there. But I also think that many people, you know, who carried bitterness quietly, now they feel socially validated to express it openly. And that is why moral leadership matters now more than ever. So, but then these attacks, for me, they truly expose what is happening in the inside of a person.
I think that's pretty much the thrust of your article, this issue of moral clarity. You seem to put a lot of emphasis. That seems to be your plea. You're saying, you know, the answer isn't revenge, but moral clarity. What do you... it's a crazy question to ask you. What do you mean by that? But what does that look like in everyday life for people who are listening now?
For me, it means being consistent, you know, be consistent, condemn violence, whether you like the victim or not, condemn it. But reject lies, even when they help your side. Reject them. Refuse to celebrate cruelty. Mm-hmm. Protect the dignity of those you disagree with. And, you know, every time I have to respond even to the insults, but then one thing that comes to mind is I have a responsibility to protect the dignity even of those that are, you know, attacking me. And I will do everything I can in my power to not respond emotionally. So for everyday people, you know, everyday people, moral clarity means truth without hatred. And, you know, conviction and courage, you know. Be convicted, but even in your conviction, stay away from violence. And if you think or you believe that you are courageous, of course, we welcome that. But let your courage be without bitterness.
Pastor, final thought to discuss with you this afternoon. Your closing line is really, really striking. Again, I think this piece was just worded so incredibly beautifully. You say, hatred always promises liberation. It always delivers chains. Explain your thinking in a little more depth for me. What chains are you talking about?
Chains of bitterness, you know, chains of constant outrage, chains of tribal identity, of manipulation, you know, spiritual emptiness. All of these things are chains. So many think that anger makes them powerful. But no, anger many a times make them predictable and controllable. So many think that hatred frees them of whatever, but it actually enslaves them emotionally and morally. True freedom is found in truth. You know, in self-control, justice, forgiveness, and light. And that's, for me, the space where I thrive the most, because I'm a free man. I'm not bound by my past. I'm not bound by the apartheid that happened in South Africa. I'm not bound. I'm a free man. And so to me, then truth becomes, actually, truth is the language of free people.
Pastor Tom, quite a remarkable man, such insights into issues many of us can't actually verbalize. Thank you for what you are doing, and thank you for the time speaking to me on Chai FM this afternoon.